Welcome back to In the Moment. Seth Tupper is a journalist, he's a Dakota political junkie, and he's an author. His new book is called Calvin Coolidge in the Black Hills. It's released this month by the History Press. You can pre-order it on Amazon today. Seth is with us from the SDPB studios in Rapid City at the Dahl Arts Center. Seth, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you, and thanks for having me to talk about the book.
I've been winkling it out of you for months now. I want to say finally we can see this book in print. It's been a long journey from your early research to the finished product. Tell me a little bit about how you got interested in the subject, and then we'll talk about the evolution of the book itself.
Well, long ago, I guess I first became aware of Calvin Coolidge's stay in the Black Hills just from reading that I'd done. There's a great book called Great White Fathers. I'm going to butcher the author's last name, but I think it was John Taliaferro. It's about the history of Mount Rushmore and the carving and guts and Borglum. And there's some material in there about Calvin Coolidge coming to Mount Rushmore during the start of carving. And there's a great book called A Marvelous 100 Square Miles. Again, probably butcher the name, Suzanne Barta Julin. That's a book about the history of Black Hills tourism. And there's some material in there about Coolidge's stay and his influence on the development of tourism in the Black Hills. So I had been just generally aware of it. And then in the spring of 2014, I was actually contacted by an acquisitions editor with the History Press who had done some rooting around about topics of regional history in this area of the Great Plains and decided that this would be a great topic for a book, and nobody had ever written it, and was looking for people to write it. And just having been here as a journalist for many years and having some interest in history, my name came up, and he contacted me, and I said, yeah, that would be a great project, and away I went. So that was in the spring of 2014 when I began the research on it.
And if you go to SethTupper.com, you can see the book cover, read a little bit about it, read a little bit about Seth. And then there's also links to all your journalism some of your featured journalism pieces for the Rapid City Journal. And the first thing that came to mind was, of course, you've got time to write a book with all the other things that you're doing. So talk to me a little bit about how you managed to take on a project like that, because you are so busy doing a lot of in-depth work for the Rapid City Journal. You're with us, once a month on and other projects. How'd you fit it in and do the research, do the work?
Well, it's mornings. That's really what it is. when I got this opportunity in 2014, I was already, at that time, I was finishing up a freelance project for the Center for Public Integrity. They did their state integrity investigation. They hired a freelancer in every one of the 50 states to research laws pertaining to corruption and to basically give each state a grade. And they hired me that year, and in order to get that work done, it was a really great freelance job, well-paying, so I did it, and I was having to get up earlier and earlier in the morning, 5 or 5:30 in the morning, to get that done. And then I got the opportunity to write this book at the same time, and I thought, well, I'm already in the habit of getting up and getting a couple hours of work in the morning before I have two young kids and a wife, and before they would rise, I'd get up, and everything was nice and quiet, and I didn't have emails popping in, and my phone wasn't ringing, and so that was when I got my work done, and I just rolled in from one project to another, and it became a habit, and now I became an early riser.
How did it feed the work that you're doing in journalism? How did those two worlds sort of cross over and nourish one another?
Well, just obviously being a journalist, I think helped me. This is a book about history. I'm not a trained historian, but so what I brought to it was everything I've learned in journalism about, evaluating sources and doing research. And it was really just more of a practical matter being here at the Rapid City Journal. Of course, I had access to, journal archives and the Rapid City Public Library and a lot of the materials that anybody would have needed to write this book on Calvin Coolidge and the Black Hills were right here within close reach. So, I don't know if I'd have been able to do it or do it as well if I'd have been somewhere else.
Right. Really well written, really compelling read, great narrative, great writing, well crafted. Tell me a little bit about how you found the human element of all this beyond just the history and the journal articles to really look at Calvin Coolidge and his time here and those daily sort of interactions he had with people.
Sure. That when I started my research, I kind of viewed it as starting really broadly and then just continually narrowing down into more specifics. So I started and I just read the most recent biography of Coolidge was written by Amity Schles. It's just called Coolidge. And she was actually out here this past winter to give the commencement address at the School of Mines. I got a chance to meet her. But so I tried to get grounded in all things Coolidge and who he was and what kind of a person he was and tried to use that to inform myself as I narrowed down into more specific research about what he actually did in the Black Hills. And that was really helpful because, you know, Coolidge, as I think most people know, the stereotype of him was he was called Silent Cal. He was very reserved, very conservative person politically and personally. But in the Black Hills, he came out of his shell on a number of occasions and dressed up as a cowboy and, you know, for example, and just kind of shocked the national reporters that were with him in the Black Hills, you know, by the degree to which he was able to be animated and have fun. So it was important to know, you know, again, who he was from the start and how people knew him and then how out of character he was at times when he came to the Black Hills.
And why is he here in the first place? What brings him to the Black Hills for a summer?
Well, Coolidge, there was the farm economy was terrible in the 1920s, and there was a group of people in Congress known as the Farm Bloc from the Midwest that were trying repeatedly to pass this bill called the McNary-Haugen Bill, and that was named for two members of Congress who were the prime proponents of it. And, you know, to make a long story short, it was a bill that basically was trying to do something for farmers to help the farm economy and to get the government more involved in propping up prices for farmers. Coolidge didn't like that. He was very conservative. He didn't think the government should meddle in the farm economy. So he vetoed the bill. That really angered all the Farm Bloc lawmakers, and people thought it probably angered their constituents. And so you had a huge segment of the country, and the way the Farm Bloc was kind of described was reaching from, you know, anywhere from Ohio to Oregon and from, you know, North Dakota down into Texas. So you had this huge chunk of the country that was theoretically angry at something that Coolidge had done. And that was in 1927. And at that point, everybody thought he was going to run for reelection in 1928. So what people thought was that he needed to take his summer vacation somewhere in the West to sort of patch up relationships with the Farm Bloc lawmakers, with their constituents. And so it was only a matter of days after his McNary-Haugen veto that he decided and let it be known that this summer, instead of vacationing on the East Coast or wherever, he was going to vacation somewhere in the West.
And this is where he makes the announcement that he's not going to seek reelection. What's the significance of announcing that from the Black Hills?
Well, just to set that up, I mean, even all throughout the summer, he came here in basically mid-May and left in early September. And all throughout the summer, the speculation was that he was running for re-election. And, you know, and people thought he was out here pandering to farmers and ranchers. He was dressing up as a cowboy. He wore an Indian headdress. He was going to rodeos, you know, doing all the things that you'd expect a politician to do who was trying to curry favor with people in a certain location. But then August, he is at his summertime office in the old Rapid City High School, and he's doing one of his regular twice weekly press conferences with reporters. And he's holding a wad of folded up papers in his hand, and he tells all the reporters, there's about two dozen of them in a converted French teacher's classroom, everybody come up here and grab one of these slips of paper. So they do, and they all go back to the desk and they open it up, and it says simply, I do not choose to run for president in 1928, period. That was it. They tried to press him for an explanation. He wouldn't give one. Silent Cal, the stereotype, really held true there. And they all rushed out and reported it for that day's papers. And it was stunning news. A lot of people expected him to run for re-election. He could have, but he just decided not to. And then the fact that he did it in a converted classroom in a high school in Rapid City in the Black Hills, a place that really was a backwater at the time, or people saw as a backwater, you know, kind of an unknown part of the country. People around the country thought, you know, what in the world was going on out there to cause this kind of political tremor?
Yeah. Ramifications of that.
Yeah, and so then, of course, that set a lot of things. A lot of people thought, right. They tried to parse Coolidge's statement. He said, I do not choose to run for president. A lot of people thought, okay, he doesn't choose, but maybe he would if nominated. And right. So there was a lot of speculation, but he didn't condone any efforts to nominate him. And then, of course, Herbert Hoover wins the Republican nomination, goes on to become president, and, of course, you know, early into his term, we have the Great Crash and the Great Depression ensues. And Hoover basically gets the historical blame for that, maybe mm-hmm. deservedly so. But of course, you know, Coolidge, by exiting the stage when he did, escaped what maybe could have been blamed on him, according right. to some historians. So right. yeah.
The book is called Calvin Coolidge and the Black Hills. You can pre-order it now from Amazon. It's written by our own Seth Tupper. See how I claimed you for our own. I mean the state of South Dakota's own Seth Tupper. And it's about time that he wrote a book. And I hope that there's... Seth, I hope this is the beginning of other conversations we can have about Calvin Coolidge and the book. And I hope it's the beginning of conversations about other books you might write in the future, because this is a winner.
That would be great. And thank you again so much for having me on and giving me the platform to talk about it.